Hi, thanks for listening to this podcast that highlights books by authors with the Authors Guild of Tennessee. My name is Katie Lise Jones, and in this episode I interview Bobby Phelps Wolverton. Wolverton is the author of Behind the Smile, Sex, Humor, and Terror During the Glamour Years of Aviation, and the book is a memoir of her time as a flight attendant from 1965 to 1973. Let's go to the interview. Bobby, so when were the glamour years of aviation and what made them glamorous?
Between 1965 and 75, that was the first of the jet years. People dressed for the occasion. It was extremely special, very expensive at the time. Only 10% of Americans had ever flown, and so it was extremely special. You didn't have people bringing on their suitcases. The racks overhead were all open, so there were just blankets and pillows up there. No suitcases, no luggage. And the flight attendants, they had to have a look about them. You had to be between 5'2" and 5'8" and not weigh over 135 pounds. You couldn't wear glasses. You had to be between 21 and 28, and they really looked for women that would have what they called sex appeal. That was what the advertising for the airlines was pushing.
And you became a flight attendant in 1965 and worked until 1973. How did you get into the business, and was it something that you expected to do?
I never expected to do it. As a matter of fact, I was first hired as a secretary for Pan Am. And when I arrived in San Francisco to get the job, it had been inadvertently filled. And so now I didn't have the job. They offered me a job as a stewardess, and I turned them down and said no. I had been trained as an executive secretary, and that was what I was going to do. So I did that for about a year, worked at a law firm in San Francisco, and then realized I wanted to travel. I wanted to have some fun. And my boyfriend at the time suggested World Airways. And so I applied the very next day and was hired immediately.
And you mentioned in a few chapters in your book that it took your father a while to come around to your new job. Why was he less than thrilled that you chose to be a flight attendant?
In his mind, flight attendants were glorified waitresses and also ones that might have extra sex going on. He was very conservative. He had spent quite a bit of money on my college and my secretarial training, and he could not see my wasting it by being a flight attendant.
In the subtitle of your book, you list terror as one of the memorable experiences from the glamorous years of aviation. And in one chapter, you quote a flight crew mantra that says, "Hours of boredom punctuated by moments of sheer terror." Can you tell us about one of these terrifying experiences?
Well, there's more than one. Often it's weather-related, from anything from extreme windstorms when we were flying over to Hawaii from the West Coast to landing at McGuire Air Force Base in the middle of a snowstorm. It was actually a blizzard. It took us three times to land. To flying into Vietnam, flying through flak as we landed in Saigon Airport.
You also tell many stories of your downtime during layovers. What were some of your big stops? I know in your book it says that you traveled a lot to Europe. You also talk a lot about traveling to Hawaii. How did you spend your downtime?
Well, I flew for a charter company, and we didn't have unions. So when we arrived at any base, we were there for between 2 days and 2 weeks. And during that time, we sightseed. It was wonderful. We stayed in the very best hotels in Hawaii. It was at the Ilokai, right on Waikiki Beach in Japan. It was at Frank Lloyd Wright's Imperial Hotel in Europe, Salisbury Castle. I mean, we just had wonderful, wonderful places where we stayed All our expenses were paid, and we went out sightseeing, everything from climbing mountains to canoeing in the Philippines to going to museums.
Maybe the opposite of sightseeing. You talk about several times where there were complications in the air, not necessarily mechanical failures, but just small things like what happens when you accidentally spill food on a woman's white suit. Or there's one story where you disrupt a couple that is having sex under a blanket. And then tragic things, for instance, in one chapter, a baby stops breathing and you have to unblock the baby's air passage. Will you actually read us a section from that story?
Yes, here it is. Our flight left Boston 15 minutes after the scheduled departure time. Our airline was taking another group of sightseers to the British and Irish Isles. With many families and numerous children on board, Nancy and I had our hands occupied, filling baby bottles, handing out junior wings, and entertaining youngsters bored during the six-hour flight. "Can you help me?" a young mother asked as I walked toward my station in the rear of the plane. Her toddler was crying and trying to escape her grasp. "Here, try this," I said, handing her some paper doilies and a crayon. The boy immediately became occupied with drawing and stopped squirming. "I'll bring you some juice. That should help." While I was going about my duties, Amy, a 10-year-old with blonde braids, followed me. She wore a blue pastel dress with white lace around the collar. She and her parents were going to visit their extended family in Ireland. Throughout the flight, she tugged on my skirt and asked never-ending questions. Why do we have to put seat belts and tray tables up? "Because, Amy," I answered, "in an emergency, the seat backs and tables can hinder passengers from leaving." "Why do you want us to have our window shades open when we land?" "Again, Amy, in case of an emergency, it helps the rescuer see inside." She was obviously very smart, and I let her wear an extra uniform smock and added junior wings to the outfit. She loved being a little flight attendant, and her parents were thankful for the attention she received. After the dinner service, Amy fell asleep, and I returned to the back of the plane to continue my chores. Nancy finished cleaning the aft galley while I stocked supplies in the lavatories. Finally, we sat down to enjoy our own meals. Nancy and I parked next to each other on the wide jump seat and chatted as we ate. A young man approached the rear area. He didn't interrupt our conversation and never said a word. He just stood there and looked at us. I thought he was waiting for one of the restrooms. "They're not occupied," I said. "Just open the door." He murmured, "My baby's not breathing."
You also talk about some of your own vacations when you're not working flight attendant shifts. And one sticks out to me where you were in Cairo in 1967 during the Six-Day War. Why did you go to Cairo and how did you get out?
I had taken a 4-month leave of absence and went around the world by myself, and I had been in Pakistan just a few days before, and then I arrived in Cairo 2 days before the war broke out, and I didn't realize that Egypt had been closed to all Americans. So when I was there, I went to the American Express office, which everyone did at the time, to pick up their mail and receive any money that might be sent their way. While I was there, I noted the office was empty, and the manager was very upset with me for being in the country when it had been closed to tourists. And he took me back to the Hilton Hotel, introduced me to the manager, and I became a ward of the Hilton Hotel for the next few days. I was the only American tourist at that time. The only other people were diplomats and media personnel.
So when you were writing your book, how did you pick the stories that you told in the book? Did you try to find a good balance between sex, humor, and terror? What was that process like?
I wrote all the stories, and I didn't write any negative stories. There were a few with our airlines, again, because we didn't have unions. There were some things that I just didn't want to put in the book. So what I did was I wrote out all the stories. There's 42 of them. Put them on the headlines on a little piece of paper, and then I shifted them around like a game almost. And I wanted to end with the time going into Vietnam, the scariness of flying there, our airplane being attacked, and then the wonderful time as we left Vietnam, exciting yelling of from the soldiers as our plane picked up its wheels and took off from Saigon Airport.
And how do you remember all of these things after 40 years? Did you keep a journal? How have these stories stayed alive for you?
I didn't keep a journal, but I go to airline reunions, and we're always telling stories. My father was a wonderful storyteller, so I have told these stories for years. And then 5 years ago, I had a breast cancer scare, and I was talking to a girlfriend of mine, and she telling her about a story, and she said, "You should write a book." And at our town, they had a memoir writer giving classes, and I went to that at our library, and that was the start of the book.
And you're actually working on two other books right now, is that right? What are they going to be about?
One is about backpacking, hitchhiking around the world for 18 months. That's what I did after flying. And then the next one is living out on a ranch in the middle of nowhere for 30 years in Idaho.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you.
That was Bobby Phelps Wolverton, author of Behind the Smile, Sex, Humor, and Terror During the Glamour Years of Aviation. You can buy Behind the Smile at Amazon.com, and you can learn more about the Authors Guild of Tennessee at authorsguildoftennessee.org.